Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yoyam kalas tasya te vyakta bandho.
Yoyam kalas tasya te vyakta bandho.
Cheshtam ahus cheshtate yena vishwam.
Cheshtam ahus cheshtate yena vishwam.
Nimesh adir vatsaranto mahiyams.
Nimesh adir vatsaranto.
Tam tveshanam kshema dhamma prapadye. Yoyam kalas tasya te vyakta bandho. Cheshtam ahush cheshtate yena vishwam. Nimishadir vatsaranto mahiyams. Tam tveshanam kshema dhamma prapadye. Yaha, that which, I am, this, kalaha, time, minutes, hours, seconds, tasya, of him, te, of you, avyakta bandho, O my Lord, you are the inaugurator of the unmanifested.
You are the inaugurator of the unmanifested.
The original Mahatattva or Prakriti.
The original Mahatattva or
Prakriti. Cheshtam.
Cheshtam.
Attempt or pastimes.
Attempt or pastimes.
Ahuhu.
Ahuhu.
It is said.
It is said.
Cheshtate.
Cheshtate.
Works.
Works.
Yena.
Yena.
By which.
Vishwam,
the entire creation,
Nimesha Adihi,
beginning with minute parts of time. Minute means tiny, not minute, but minute. Minute, Ati Sukshma, minute. Minute is this much, minute is this. Vatsara antaha.
Vatsara antaha.
Up to the limit of a year.
Up to the limit of a year.
Mahiyan.
Mahiyan.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Tam.
Tam.
Unto your lordship.
Unto your lordship.
Tva ishanam.
Tva ishanam.
Unto you, the supreme controller.
Unto you, the supreme controller.
Shema Dhamma.
Shema Dhamma.
The reservoir of all auspiciousness.
The reservoir of all auspiciousness.
Prapadye.
Prapadye.
I offer full surrender.
I offer full surrender.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Oh, inaugurator of the material energy. This wonderful creation works under the control of powerful time, which is divided into seconds, minutes, hours, and years. This element of time, which extends for many millions of years, is but another form of Lord Vishnu. For your pastimes, you act as the controller of time. But you are the reservoir of all good fortune. Let me offer my full surrender unto your lordship. Purport. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Yat chakshuresha savita sakalagrahanam raja samasta suramurtir ashesha teja yasyagyaya brahmati samvita kala chakro Govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. The sun, is the king of all planetary systems and has unlimited potency in heat and light. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord, supreme personality of Godhead, under whose control even the sun, which is considered to be the eye of the Lord, rotates within the fixed orbit of eternal time. Although we see the cosmic manifestation as gigantic and wonderful, it is within the limit of Kala, the time factor. This time factor is also controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Mayadina Prakriti Suyate Sachara Charam. Prakriti, the cosmic manifestation, is under the control of time. Indeed, everything is under the control of time. And time is controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Lord has no fear of the onslaughts of time. Time is estimated according to the movements of the sun, Sovita. Every minute, every second, every day, every night, every month, and every year of time can be calculated according to the sun's movements. But the sun is not independent, for it is under time's control. Brahmati Sangrita Kala Chakraha. The sun moves within the Kala Chakra, the orbit of time. The sun is under the control of time, and time is controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord has no fear of time. The Lord is addressed here as Avyakta Bandhu, or the inaugurator of the movements of the entire cosmic manifestation. Sometimes the cosmic manifestation is compared to a potter's wheel. When a potter's wheel is spinning, who has set it in motion? It is the potter, of course. This is discussed in the fifth canto verse we read this morning. It is the potter, of course. Although sometimes we can see only the motion of the wheel and cannot see the potter himself. Therefore, the Lord who is behind the motion of the cosmos is called Avyakta Bandhu. Everything is within the limits of time. But time moves under the direction of the Lord, who is therefore not within time's limit. Mother Devaki is again speaking very learned glorification of Krishna as the Supreme Personality and as the creator and maintainer of the material existence. Very peculiar that she's afraid that Kamsa will harm him. She's very completely aware of his, and still that bhava of vatsalya, of thinking that Krishna is helpless and dependent on her, that still eclipses her knowledge. It's not that she's ignorant. Look at what she's saying. So she refers to Krishna as Avyakta Bandhu and Shema Dhamma, the invisible friend, and the reservoir of all auspiciousness. Krishna's original abode, Om Tad Vishno Paramam Padam, the original abode, this is the abode of auspiciousness. There is no influence of material time. No, it wasn't. Yatra Nimesharto Api, what is it in the Brahma Samhita? Not even a fraction of a second. Nimesha is the time it takes for the eye to blink. I think on the average, every 3 seconds or so, three plus a fraction of seconds, the eye blinks involuntarily. It is automatically controlled by the brain stem, unconsciously. This can be used as calculation of time. Any regular motion can be used as a unit of time. Actually, time is invisible, just like the ether. The ether has no delimits It has no markings on it to indicate parts. It has no parts. Time also has no real parts. Time is eternal, indivisible. But we, because time is the controlling factor that makes things happen in sequence in this world, one thing after another, the sequences can be used to superimpose artificially on time an idea of divisions, past, present, and future. And if we have a regular reoccurring event that is caused by time, that can be used to measure time. The sun's movement is extremely regular. So therefore, the movements of the sun are normally used as this, as the standard from the unit, the year, the month, which is 1/12 of the year, and the divisions, further smaller divisions of the year and the month, are our standard measurements of time based on the movement of the sun. Even if nowadays the scientists use some atomic clock according to the radioactive breakdown of some element, cesium or who knows what, and that's their atomic clock. Well, actually, it's the oscillation of some a molecule. They measure that, and they consider that extremely regular. That's okay. You can use various standards for measurement. But the most standard is the sun. Similarly, eye blink is more or less regular and periodic. It occurs about, you know, maybe not as precisely as the vibration of a certain atom, but pretty precisely there's a regular cycle of blinking of the eye. But Brahma Samhita says there is no such time factor in the spiritual world. Even a fraction of a blink of an eye, such a small piece of time, you will not find in the spiritual world. Because that controlling factor, that energy, is not present in the spiritual realm. There is Kshema Dhamma, the realm of all auspiciousness, where everything is done out of love. All the Kataganam Natyam Gamanam. All the talking is singing. All the walking is dancing. That is the spiritual world, Goloka. There is no time. There's no past, present, and future. If you like to do something, that event can go on forever. Or you can repeat it. You can recall the past and do it over again in the spiritual world. There is no restriction. In the material world, what is finished and cannot be recovered. And what is occurring momentarily and is immediately gone. And everything has to happen at the time that Kala dictates. Not before, not after. You want to become a Kropati. You will become a Kropati at your appointed time. After, you will work very hard for it. And then you'll get your money at the destined time, not before, not after. You will die at a certain time. You don't know, but it's already fixed. Somebody knows. The demigods can look it up in their database, and they can tell the moment you're going to die. But it's privileged information that you don't have access to. You don't have the password. But the information is there. Everybody in the heavenly planets can look up the moment you're going to die. You'd like to know that, but you're not allowed to know. But it's fixed by time. Everything that occurs in the material world is fixed by time. Even the movements of the great grahas who are controlling everybody's lives. The planets that we were reading about this morning. The sun especially, but also the moon, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. These are the astrologically significant planets that traditionally have been calculated. Other planets are less important. Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. They may be there, but their astrological influence is only minor. Rahu, Ketu are also there. They have good and bad influences. Today's verse in the fifth canto described that Venus is usually auspicious for everybody. Mars is usually inauspicious. Jupiter, if it's not going backwards, is usually auspicious. When planets seem to be going backwards, they're not really going backwards, but it's relative motion of the Earth and the other planets. Because one planet is moving faster than the other one, one is seeming to go backwards. So when the relative movement of Jupiter or any other planet is backwards, retroverse, then it is considered inauspicious. But this is just very, very simplistic characterization of which planet is auspicious and which is inauspicious. The actual calculation done by an expert astrologer is much more complicated. The same planet, in combination with other planets and an individual's chart, can be auspicious and inauspicious in various ways. And very often it's a combination of some good and some bad, influenced by each planet. We know material life is very complicated. We get something good, we get a nice cup of sweet rice, but there's some sand in it. There's always bad mixed with the good. From the higher point of view, it's all bad. A bala a manda shob mano dharma. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own opinion is that the idea that this is good and this is bad is foolishness. This is relative calculation by material intelligence. It's all mental concoction to think that this is good and that other thing is bad. It's all bad, everything material. It's all inauspicious. It's all a little bit of pleasure mixed with a lot of suffering. Everybody's life, from the worm in the stool up to Lord Brahma, his pleasure is mixed with a lot of suffering and frustration. Brahma lives so long, but he's still thinking, at the end of Dwiparardha, I have to die. He knows when he's going to die. He's got access to the database, and he knows when his own death is coming. Demigods also know when their term is finished. But us mortals, down here in Martya Loka, where death is the normal occurrence, where what do people do down here in Martya Loka? We die. Therefore, it's called Martya Loka, where the main activity is dying. It occurs so frequently for us. Just like the flies that live for a few hours and dash themselves into the light bulb and die. We enjoy life for a few decades. But from the point of view of the demigods, all we ever do down here is die. Well, to speak of the point of view of Goloka, this whole material realm, up to and past Swargaloka, is just a place of death. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Arvartino, Arjuna. Krishna's point of view is that all the way up to Brahmaloka, the whole material world is just a place of repeated birth and death. How can that be considered auspicious? You can have something for a short time, but it'll be taken away from you, all of it. What's the use? You have money in the bank, but your bank balance is going to be liquidated. You know, at a time you don't know, the bank has the privilege to wipe out your account in any time they have the whim to decide. Just push a button on their computer, your balance is zero. And you never know when that's going to happen. That's our material life. At any moment, all our assets will be taken, will be at a random time or a time that we don't know. Everything we own, everything we're attached to, will be taken away from us. Can you call that auspicious? So the whole material world is inauspicious. But Devaki is addressing Krishna as Kshema Dama and Avyakta Bandho, the invisible friend. Is that a friend who steals everything you have and doesn't even let you know when he's going to steal it? Is that auspicious to be living, to have such a friend? It depends what kind of relationship you have with him. If you are a rebelliously living entity who wants to live independently from Krishna, then he's your friend, but he's going to act as your friend by smashing you, by subjecting you repeatedly to the sufferings of Janma, Mrityu, Jara, and Vyadi. That's how our friend helps us wake up to the undesirableness of living in this illusion. By arranging for us to die, to get sick, to get old, over and over again, until we learn our lesson. That is the activity of our best friend. We can have that kind of relationship with him, that he's just the orderer of our punishment. He doesn't punish us ourselves, himself. He has his agents, Prakriti and Kala. And their business is to make everybody suffer. To make people take birth according to schedule, come out of the womb and suffer the birth, and grow up and suffer during their childhood, during their maturity, during their old age, suffer old age and disease, and then, by the dictates of time, die. So Prakriti, to working together, Kala and Prakriti makes life miserable for everybody in material existence. But it is auspicious. It is for our rectification. And those who will be rectified, who are willing to be rectified, and re-enter Krishna's devotional service, who can undergo that adjustment of consciousness, then life becomes all auspicious. Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. For the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the whole material world is full of bliss. Purna Sukhayate. Vishwam. That's not how it's. Is that it? Yeah, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. Full of happiness. That is the vision of a Paramahamsa devotee of Mahaprabhu. He doesn't see any misery, because it's all auspicious in connection with Krishna. Anybody, even the residents of hell, and the residents of our modern world, which is just as good as hell. Delhi, New York, these places are hell. And the residents of these modern hells are actually very fortunate, because they all have the opportunity to chant Hare Krishna, upon which doing, with love and without offenses, they will be delivered. Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Vajit. Just by proper glorification of Krishna, anybody, no matter how inauspicious his circumstances of his life are, he will be delivered from all his suffering, all his restrictions of his life, and the dictates of time. He will be liberated from time. Paramvajate, and go back to the transcendental realm. And that's available to everybody now, by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The residents of hell and the residents of our modern cities can all take advantage of the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's Avyakta Bandho, our hidden friend. We don't see him. In the material realm, God is very hard to see, very hard to discover. But he's hiding there. He's always our friend. He's hiding in our heart as the Paramatma, Supersoul. And he's hiding in his temples. Nobody wants to go to the temples and take darshan. He's hiding in the Bhagavatam. He's hiding in other shastras. He's there. And he's ready to arrange. Our life is auspicious in the sense that it's all under the control of Krishna. Everything that happens to us is for our good, including our suffering. And he can arrange for our pure auspiciousness, kshema dhamma, yoga kshemam vaham yaham. So that's taken, that motto has been adopted by the insurance company of India.
Yeah.
Kshema is actually used as one word for insurance. But the real insurance policy is mameva ye prapajyante mayam etam tadantite. Just depend on me. You know, you cannot depend on your insurance policy. So what? You die and your widow will get some money. That's a poor substitute for eternal life in bliss, where you don't have to die. Such an insurance policy is desirable. This is what Krishna is offering. I'll see that you don't have to die again. I'll arrange that. That insurance is available. Tatra lolyam ekalam mulyam. And all you have to pay for it, the only premium for that policy, is intense eagerness. Intense eagerness to have a taste for hearing and chanting Krishna's names and his glories. That is how Krishna is our avyakta bandho, our invisible friend, and the reservoir of all auspiciousness. Devaki knows this. She's very glad. Now Krishna has appeared. Okay, four arms. Very nice. Now, yes, you are the Supreme Lord. You are the absolute controller. The material time cannot touch you. What to speak of this little fly, Kamsa? What can he do? That's okay. But we have leelas here to perform. And I'm your mother. And all your devotees are waiting for you. So please, turn into an ordinary child. And please, make some arrangement that Kamsa's not going to come here and kill you. Please. This is the prayers that are going to come now. Out of love, out of the bhava of her ecstasy, of Vatsalya Rasa, that's all she can think. Even after speaking all this learned philosophy, recognizing Krishna's actual position. More important than that is Krishna's relationship with his devotees. Krishna has to save the devotees of Mathura. He has to go to Gokula and save those devotees. Save them from the pain of separation. Forget about Kamsa, he's nothing. Nothing to be worried about. But the pain of separation from Krishna's association, that is the real enemy that has to be defeated. So Krishna, please, you have to go to Gokula and be with your devotees. This is what Devaki has in mind. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
The residents of Swargalokaveri,
their eyes. Their eyes don't blink. Okay, demigods' eyes don't blink. Yes?
Animisha.
Well, does that include demigods or just Vaikunthavasi? Demigods' eyes don't blink.
I was wondering about.
I guess there's no dust in the air.
Spiritual world,
or what's
the situation in the spiritual world?
Oh, certainly, that's Vaikuntha. Lord Narayan is called Animisha. Naimishe Animisha Kshetre. That means not demigod place. It's the place of Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan is called Animisha. So he's the first one that's got eyes that don't blink. And the Vaikunthavas, in Vaikuntha, nobody's eyes blink. There's no need for it. The eyes blink because there's dust in the air and dirt gets in your eyes and the eyes have to clean themselves. Yeah, well, they're living on the earth. On the earth, eyes blink. So they take human bodies and they do things that human beings do, like make cow dung patties, and their eyes blink. That's living on the earth. In Goloka? Goloka is a replica. You can look at it either way. That Gokula is a replica of Goloka, or Goloka is a replica of Gokula. Gopakumara was amazed when he went to Goloka. He said, "This looks just like Uttar Pradesh. Yeah. Where I was born. You know, the middle part of India. And now I'm on the highest spiritual planet above Vaikuntha, above Ayodhya, above Mathura, and it looks just like the place where I came from." So that's the bhava, that's the arrangement of Goloka, that things seem to be going on just like they're in the, you know, Uttar Pradesh. Yeah. Including blinking eyes. I never read that detail, but I don't know. I'm not sure about that. Devotees are coming in the same spiritual form. Krishna comes in the same spiritual form.
My understanding, Radharani is not a jiva, but jivas, devotees who are jivas, they take material bodies. That I've heard from Prabhupada. Sure. That those who are not jivas, that's a different story. But those who are jivas, when they are nitya siddha associates coming from the spiritual world, they take material bodies in the material world. So those with material bodies on the earth are going to get blinking bodies. Bodies whose eyes blink. Those who bring their spiritual bodies, I guess those eyes don't blink. Yes? She's complaining about eyelids, not that they're blinking. She's complaining that there are eyelids.
Yeah, because they blink and they shut
them. Okay, but that's bhava. You know, the tattva is one thing, bhava is another. She could be complaining about something that actually is no problem for her. She's just thinking about the other ones. I don't know. I can't tell you whether, you know, the principal gopis who are not jivas, whether their eyes blink or not. I can't tell you. And why is Radharani complaining about it if her eyes don't blink? I don't know. But that's, you know, in ecstasy you can complain about something that actually isn't a problem for you, just because you're thinking like that. Just like Devaki's thinking, this Kamsa is going to come and kill my son. There's no question of that happening. But she's thinking like that anyway, out of ecstasy. So someone whose eyes don't blink may be complaining about blinking eyes anyway, just out of ecstasy. Yes, it's possible. No? Yes? Well, out of ecstasy can make that, you know, that kind of irrational behavior happen. You're complaining about something that's actually not even happening. Okay. Yes,
sir. What do you chant when you get into class?
Oh, this is, you could have asked that before.
This is, I wanted to many times, but by the time you get to the end of the class, you forget.
Sanatan Goswami wrote the Krishna Lila Stuffa, which is, about to be produced by the BBC, and it's 432 verses long. It's mostly a description of the 10th canto pastimes in Vraja, but at the end he's appended a few short stotras of his own, and one of them is this Shri Bhagavat Mahima Stotra, just 5 verses long. This is it. I can give you the file with the verses in translation. Sanatana Goswami, part of the Krishna Lila Stava.
Yes. Can you give some insight, more insight, as to how the spiritual bodies are interacting with material energy?
Which spiritual bodies?
Krishna, the eternal residence of Lord.
Okay, but I made the what I understood from Prabhupada is that those associates of the Lord who are jivas, they don't come in their spiritual bodies.
Yeah,
they take material bodies.
That
so if you got stuff from its spiritual body comes into the material world, how does it deal with the material energy? Spirit controls matter. There is no matter to deal with in the spiritual realm. But if the spirit enters the material realm, there's no difficulty. There's no, the matter cannot influence spirit. It's only by misidentification. But if a soul's consciousness is proper, he's not misidentifying himself with matter, then matter can't touch him. He can, just like a knife cutting through butter, no problem. He can just, glide through the material realm and not be affected by anything. And none of his activities are restricted or controlled by that, the matter or by time.
But at the same time,
that's if you come into the material world with a spiritual body. And a jiva doesn't do that normally.
But at the same time, the spiritual bodies are having some effect on the matter.
Yes, spirit can affect matter. It's not the other way it can't. Spirit, pure spirit, that can automatically and easily control matter. Not independently. A spirit soul who is not God, out of love, he always acts subordinate to the desire of God.
But the material energy can easily be controlled without any effort by such a pure spiritual entity. You know, he doesn't transgress the desire of the Lord, but he has a liberated soul has the power without any separate endeavor, any separate mechanism. He can easily control, dominate the material energy just by desire. So if someone comes into the material world, the spiritual body has no problem getting around and manipulating the material energy. It happens, that power, ability is automatically there. Just like if I have money in my pocket, I don't need a special license or a certificate to use the money. The money itself is power. I got 100 rupees in my pocket. You know, it doesn't matter. I don't have to explain where I got it from. Or normally I don't have to give the serial number to anybody. I just hand over the bill and it has the power to do the work of 100 rupees. Just as long as I just have to have it. Like that, if you know, that spiritual person with a spiritual body, he just grabs what he wants and he's got it and he can use it. You know, for him to use the material energy, there's no separate endeavor or mechanism necessary. Okay, Richard.
You're saying that the they come to matter body, they take matter body.
Yes.
So, what happens? They leave their spiritual bodies in the world.
No, you could, not that you leave, you take off your spiritual body. It's not removable. You know, you are your spiritual body. So you can't leave it someplace, actually. It's just covered. Like you put a coat over your body. You don't see the body under the coat. I don't, you know, do you want to see the color of my skin? You know, I have to take off the shirt. You can't see it. Like that, you don't see the spiritual body because it's covered by material body, but it's there. So it doesn't mean to get a material body doesn't mean you lose your spiritual body. But the spiritual body becomes covered over, and also becomes, if you're in conditioned life, it can't function. If you're carrying around a material body, you can't directly use your spiritual body. You don't have access to it. It's like turned off, asleep. Your spiritual body becomes dormant, asleep. Unless you're specially empowered, you know. But normally, conditioned, when you get a material body, your spiritual body stops working. It gets turned off.
Many years ago, I heard the size of the scissor soul was in the heart, was the thumb high.
Yes, because that's the relative size of the heart itself. But it's relative to the body, because everybody has a different size thumb. An elephant's thumb, if an elephant doesn't actually have a thumb, but relative to an elephant, the size of the super soul is quite big. And an ant, it's quite small. A human being is in the middle. It's relative to the total size of the body. That's why thumb, because the thumb, it's the individual's thumb, relative to his size. But that's, the heart is about a fist size, it's about a thumb.
And the super soul, when he's in the smallest part of matter, is it actually considered, do we call it an atom?
Paramanu?
Is there such a thing as things like quarks and those more...
You mean subatomic particles?
Yeah, in Vedic literature they explain.
No, well, the atoms are not the same atoms. Because the atoms that we learn about in science class, there's 111 or so different kinds of atoms. But the atoms that we learn about in the Vedic literature, there are only 5 different kinds, or 8 kinds if you include the subtle elements. 5 kinds of gross elements. So there's only 5 kinds of atoms. They're not the same atoms.
The 5 kinds of atoms are the 5...
Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So what they call an atom and what we call an atom are not exactly the same thing. Our atoms don't have parts. Their atoms, although from the ancient Greeks they inherited the idea atom, undividable, but then they found out that it does get divided. And now they're left with all these tiny little funny things that they can't identify
subatomic particles. So their atoms are not atoms, because atom means indivisible. Matter is made of more basic stuff than their atoms. Their atoms are like, complexes made out of smaller pieces. Yeah. It's another convenient way of artificially dividing up what actually doesn't have parts. So it's the time it takes a ray of light. The sun is moving, and so it's the orbit of the sun is 1 year, but the smallest division of time is the time it takes the sun's ray, as it's moving around in its orbit, to pass over one atom. That's the smallest unit of time, according to that calculation. Because you can't have anything smaller than an atom, so the smallest distance that's measurable, according to that viewpoint, is the size of an atom. So that, at least conventionally, it's an artificial convention, that's the smallest defined fraction of time. That's what this chapter 11 in the third canto discusses that. But it's just all relative divisions. It's actually just a mental creation. It's a standard unit that's defined. Okay. No? No question?
Are the different atoms considered to be different sizes?
I don't know. Probably not. Probably the difference of the physical qualities has to do with the combinations of atoms. Because the forces attracting a liquid and a solid are one is stronger than the other, and therefore the solid is going to be more condensed than the liquid. I don't think it has to do with the size of the atoms. But I don't know whether there is any difference in size. Okay, do you remember?
You spoke about Krishna as hiding. God is hiding. So many people then say, what's the reason for his hiding? If he will be present, okay, let him stay in the ocean. Give him a nice island that he has to his associates. But we would be convinced he is a god. We have, why he's not present?
Because we don't want anything to do with him. He's our friend, and we treat him rotten. He's our friend. He gave us everything we have, and we tell him, I want to enjoy it all by myself. I know you're the controller, but I don't care anymore. I want to be the controller. And actually, could you just get out of here? That's what we're telling Krishna by entering material life. And we repeatedly, the more materially entangled we become, the more we want to forget him. He stays hidden because we don't want to see him. We don't want to deal with him. That's all. If we actually asked Krishna, could I see you? Could you come visit me sometime? Then he would make himself invisible. But we don't want to see him. He just interferes with our material life. Absolute controller who claims proprietorship over everything. We don't want anything to do with such a person. No problem. We can help you. You want to see Krishna? No problem. That can be arranged. In fact, just come, take darshan. You can see first, get your first sneak preview. Come to the temple, see the deity. And then we want description. We got these books. And you can see Krishna. That's what we're here for, to help you see Krishna, if you want to. And you want to see God in some other form, that can also be arranged. The problem is people don't want to see. They may say, oh, I want to see, but they don't want to.
A lot of arguments can come back, you know, like, okay, if I want to see someone, then that person sends me his own description.
Yes.
He sends his, whatever, his form, but he doesn't allow me to see himself, so, you know, what kind of
We created barriers. We created those barriers. Krishna is willing to dismantle them. You know, but, you know, first of all, we have to give up our insistence on keeping a distance from Krishna. It's our fault, not his. He's sending us messages and pictures of himself all the time. Descriptions and pictures. Yeah, and we can meet him, but we have to remove the barriers. We put him up. It's irresponsible to not acknowledge that. That God is keeping himself distant because I asked him to. Because I put up all these barriers between us. If you think, you know, it's not your fault, then that's dishonest or just ignorant.
Because usually they say, if you have a problem with someone, you know, whatever, just you have some conflict, disagreement, then you change your mind. I mean, not change your mind, you understand the fault.
Yes.
You come and say, please forgive me. But you come, you know, and he is a friend. If Krishna is a well-wishing friend, let him be present.
Suppose someone's my well-wishing friend, and he's not going to give up on me. But every time he comes to me, every time he comes to visit me, I punch him in the face. Yeah. Every time he comes near me, I punch him in the face. So, you know, he's still going to be my friend. He's going to wish, you know, that I could get over this, you know, this irrational behavior. I'm his friend, and every time I come near him, he punches me in the face. But he's going to keep his distance. You know, you may invite him. Why don't you come by and see me again? But yeah, but every time I come, you punch me in the face. So he's not going to come until you change your behavior. But he is your well-wishing. Krishna's our well-wishing friend.
Yes.
But every time he comes near us, we offend him.
Actually, my main point was about this, the reason of hiding. Because if I understood my fault,
yeah.
So I come, you know, please forgive me. And, you know, just...
Yeah, we tell Krishna, please forgive me. And Krishna's okay, I'll stay with you. And then you punch him in the face again. You know, our friend, you know, we act like that. Our best well-wishing friend says, okay, you know, I forgive you for punching me a million times in the past. You know, now I'll stay with you.
No.
And then you punch him again.
But I'm not talking about that kind of
yeah.
understanding. I'm
yeah.
not coming to my friend of punching him.
But we're doing that. We're doing worse to Krishna. We're heaping all sorts of insults and offenses on him.
Even, okay, devotees. Do devotees want to punch Krishna?
Well, that's the difference in being a devotee. A devotee is we learn to curb our, you know, to refrain from insulting Krishna. And therefore, he comes to us.
Okay.
But non-devotees, they're so offensive that Krishna, you know, isn't going to go near them. You know? He's their best well-wishing friend, but he's going to stay hidden because he can't get near them without them being offensive. That's non-devotee. So Krishna stays away from the non-devotees because they can't have anything, you know, they can't, you know, get the scent of his fragrance without becoming offensive.
Because even the bodies, really, even their mind, they don't punch Krishna. Krishna doesn't appear to them easily.
Well, we commit aparads. That's, you know, it's not the, you know, the obvious aparad of punching somebody, but we commit more, you know, more subtle aparads. And therefore, Krishna has not fully revealed himself to us because our behavior is still offensive. When we learn how to behave with no offense, Krishna will show himself to us and let us enter his direct company. But we're too unruly, too offensive to be allowed into that company right now. We're being trained up. We're being trained up to become fit to enter that company. But we're not ready yet. Because we don't punch Krishna in the face, but we commit other aparads. Yes. But material entanglement leads to offenses, and it's an offense in itself. Right, and Krishna, and we're chanting Krishna's and thinking of, you know, how are we going to make enough money to buy a nice tape recorder? We're uttering Krishna's name and not thinking about him. That's offensive. Okay, but that's material life. If you're living in the material, it's hard to avoid that. It's in the atmosphere. You know, the controlling, the desire to control. Like, if you live in America, the whole culture there is comfort and control. You live in a poor country, you don't think so much about, as much about being the enjoyer, because there's nothing much to enjoy. Or in a place where there's all sorts of material enjoyment easily available to everybody, then you think you're the enjoyer and controller. It's in the atmosphere. So the material world, the spirit of being the controller is in the atmosphere, and it's hard to avoid. So it's hard, even for a devotee, not to be offensive. Or not. That's offense. To be materialistic is also an offense. Yeah, you can say it's excusable, but so Krishna is very happy to keep us as devotees, but he's not ready to show himself fully to us. Not until we clean up our act completely and give up even our little offenses. Normal. It's normal. It takes time to completely undo all your material attachments. It takes time. And then after that, Krishna fully reveals himself. And all the barriers are removed. Okay. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.